Hello, hello.
Hello.
Welcome, Daisy, to Common Chaos.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. We have been having you on the guest list for a while because you are a very interesting character.
We're really excited to chat to you today because I feel like you've got a lot of very interesting stories that we're going to delve into.
Thank you. I hope so. I think I live quite a boring life.
I disagree. I feel like, I don't know you that well, but yeah. I feel like, you know.
Your career at least is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some interesting bits along the way. Yeah. For sure.
Before we jump in, we ask all of our guests, what's a mantra or quote that you live by?
Ooh, I have a few. I think my favorite one that I find myself using like day to day is one taken from an Australian producer that I used to work with. And his the best human ever. And it was something that he always said in times of stress at work. It really puts into perspective. It just puts into perspective, you know, at work, sometimes you think that when something goes wrong, it's like, it's the biggest deal in the world. And like your life is ending. He used to say this thing, we're not saving lives. And it's like that for me pops into my head on a daily basis when I'm just struggling or going through something or when something goes wrong. And it's like, oh my God, like my life is over. It's like, we're not saving lives. Like there are bigger things in the world to worry about. And let's just move on and it will all be good in the morning.
Yeah.
So that's my life mantra, I would say. But I have a few.
I loved the Aussie accent. You kind of did that really well.
No, don't.
Cleo.
No.
No, I love that. It's like zoom out, kind of take everything. Look at your surroundings. There's worse things going on.
Because exactly.
In your head, you can feel like everything is so bad and crumbling, but it's just, yeah.
It's funny when you're looking into a situation from the outside as well, when you see someone so stressed over their job and it's like, calm down.
I know.
Life is not that stressful.
There are bigger things that you could be dealing with or having to worry about right now. And I think it also is paired with whenever I'm in a stressful situation or whenever I'm about to sort of enter myself into a stressful situation or go somewhere where I don't particularly want to be, I get through it by saying, do you know what? Like this time tomorrow, this will all be over.
It's over.
And then that really just gets me through that difficult moment in time.
Oh, I need to remember this because you know what? I have the worst habit and Ashton will agree. She hates this about me. I really hate doing little tasks like going to the doctors.
Me too.
Going to the dentist.
Me too.
And my brain makes it out like it is going to war to do this small little task. But then literally when it's over, it's like,
I know.
What the fuck was I worried about?
I know.
I feel great.
Why was I amping that up so badly? It can apply to anything because by the time you picture yourself tomorrow, it's like it's done.
Yeah.
You've forgotten about it.
This is a situation I get myself in with going to the gym. It's like for me, I don't mind actually being in the gym. It's the walking to or traveling to the gym that
absolutely
is the biggest deal for
or
me.
The thought of it.
Yeah. And it's the thought of like, getting myself ready, getting myself like in the zone, traveling down
putting
there,
the
that's
tights
so much
on.
Worse.
Mm. Putting the tights on for
yes.
me. Tights and shoes and the sports bra. Actually, that's just a whole, that takes a long time.
Oh, don't.
Wiggling into it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, run us through what you do and how you got into your chosen career because it's a very interesting one.
Oh my God. Where do I start? I guess we start at the beginning. Well, I am a TV and radio presenter and a bunch of other things, but it's like everything just weaves its way into it. I do a lot of different
things.
You're
a woman of many trades.
Yeah, I think I try and live as many lives as possible in one lifetime.
We can relate.
It's so stressful. And I have this dilemma day to day. There's so many different things that I want to be or I want to do. And it makes you look at life and realize how short it is. And I'm someone that wants to experience as many different things as possible.
Oh, join the chaos group, doll. Yeah. I feel like you're the perfect third person.
Yeah. you don't want to. I see, you know, these people and, you know, maybe there are some people that really enjoy sort of like, you know, narrowing into one career path or, you know, going on a specific journey in life. And that's great for them. But I look at some people that, you know, get to the age of like 50, 60, and they've just been stuck in this rat race doing the same thing day in, day out. And they've missed out on so much more that life has to offer.
For sure.
So I try and do as many things that make me happy or just give me, you know, a different perspective on life or a different experience as possible. But my day-to-day is I'm a radio TV presenter. And I got into it by a complete fluke, really. I loved talking to people and I knew that I wanted to do that in some capacity when I was growing up. But there is no direct route into doing what I do. And it's so hard because people will ask me all the time, how did you start out? Like, who do I speak to? Where do I go? And I think everyone's journey into it is really different. For mine, it was leaving school. And I don't advise this for everyone. But for me, I was at a point in my life, I was in sixth form. And
you were in what, sorry?
I was in sixth form. So like sixth basically grade. Like
Jesus, like form. I've never heard that.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah. You know, in sixth form. Like it's sixth, I guess, grade. It's like college before, like, you
grade,
go to uni.
Like,
yeah.
Grade six or yes. Year six.
So it's the point in which you either decide to then go off to work or you go to uni. And I was like 17 years old and I was like, I don't want to do uni. Like, this is not for me. And my school was like, they wanted everyone to, you know,
be on that
and further their education because, you know, it looks great
for
them.
They push that so hard.
And
why?
They do.
It doesn't impact you.
They,
like,
push,
I don't
it.
Get it.
Statistics. 98% of our students have done a university degree.
Exactly. And it wasn't for me, but I was also not being shown any other option. And I knew all of my friends were going and I was like, this is a moment for me where I just decide to, like, go along with the crowd. But I knew at that time that wasn't necessarily going to make me happy. Yeah. Or I just branch out and go off and try and figure it out on my own. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to just prioritize my happiness in that moment.
For sure.
As opposed to thinking about anyone else's opinions or what anyone else was doing. Because I was so not happy. And so I left and I had literally no qualification. We were supposed to be sitting A-levels. And I didn't have them. I was just like, I actually can't do this anymore, guys. Yeah. Like, I'm done. I'm out. It was like 3 months before my final exams. And I just decided to find the things that made me happy. And that was speaking to people. When I started off, I was literally an extra in, like, music videos. And I worked at Warner Brothers as well on, like, a movie for the summer as, like, this runner. And it was so fun. And I met so many people. And through that, I realized that, okay, this is the area that's, like, bringing me joy and I'm liking where this is going. And so I decided to make a showreel with my friend one summer of us just, like, presenting shows. Like, we were literally like, we're at a festival, like, and where? And we were not at a festival, like, we were in a park. We bought a mic, literally a
some
wired
shit
mic.
We would do.
The mic wasn't,
it's
even
plugged in
to anything. And if you look at the video, because I didn't know how to, like, crop a video or anything back then, if you look at some of the videos,
it.
You can literally see the, like, the bottom of the mic, like, unplugged on the floor.
Please tell me you did Getaway, like a fake Getaway.
What's Getaway?
Oh my god.
Like, when they're like,
iconic
today we're in Fiji
travel show.
And, like, going around.
We didn't touch travel, but that would have been
a great one.
That would have been a great one. We did more music. It was kind of like music, like entertainment news. We're at a festival. And yeah, as I said, like, we were literally in my bedroom. And I've said this before, but I went to B&Q, like a DIY store, and they sell wallpaper, and you can actually tear off samples of wallpaper to take home if you're renovating. So I went and I tore off, like, loads of different wallpapers, rolls and rolls I ended up with, and I just stuck them on my wall to act as, like, different backgrounds. And I would literally shoot all of these videos against my wall, but it would look like it was in different places. Anyway, I then had this, like, showreel of content of me presenting, and I went down to TV stations, channels, production companies, radio stations. And I literally handed over this, like, little USB to a receptionist, being like, please just give this to someone.
You know what I love? I love when you're at that age, because I feel like I relate to this so much, because when I was 17, it was like, I didn't want to be in school anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was doing the fuck it. I'm going against the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. Fuck you guys. I'm out kind of feeling. But isn't it amazing the balls you have when you're that old and you're just like, you're so determined to do anything but what everyone else is doing. So you have this confidence that's so sad that we lose that as we get older, because it's like you like to get somewhere, you have to go against everything and be ballsy to like figure it out, because I don't know how you would get into presenting. It is random, but I love that your brain went, I'm going to take some initiative here and not be lazy. I'm going to figure it out myself.
It's so true. It's almost like there's something in being so naive
to
how an industry works that I genuinely thought, like, this is going to work. And it actually did, because 3 months later, someone at a TV channel, they received that USB. They were like, hey, like, why don't you come in for a screen test? I was like, what the fuck is a screen test? I was like, okay. So I went, and I think before, as I was about to take this screen test that they were filming to get this job, they said like, oh, can you read, you can read auto cue. And I was like, yeah, I'd never seen an auto cue. I didn't even know what an auto cue was.
Is that when it's on
a
screen?
Yeah, when like it's on a screen and like,
it's got the words on the screen. And
exactly.
You read them.
So I was like, okay. And I winged it and I did it. And then as I was getting the train home, I literally got an email to say, oh, okay, like we want you.
Oh my God.
Like to intern or actual job?
It was a job, but
wow.
It was
amazing.
It was a presenting job for a live TV.
No, fuck show. No. Absolutely not.
Like, oh my God.
I always say people that do live presenting, like respect. Yeah. Or like present at award shows, like the anxiety.
It's mad.
My God.
But again, I think like that was really perfect for the time in my life because I was so naive that live TV is the best when you don't think too much about
for
it.
Sure. Mm.
The best live TV is just natural and casual.
Yeah, true.
And you know, like off the cuff. When things go wrong in live TV, that's the best
Funny.
Live TV.
Yeah.
And
you don't want to
roll with it.
Exactly. And it was kind of like I guess the show was positioned for like teenagers, like after school. And it was every single day as well. So I booked this like amazing
Full
job
time.
Every single day after school for like teenagers. It was really cool. It used to get played in like every Now salon in the UK.
Oh my God.
That's amazing. And you know what? It's great to just dive deep in the deep end and just go straight into learning those skills early on so that the next job you do, you're set.
Exactly.
I feel like you learn best by just doing and it like it makes the nerves go away a lot more than just pretending you're doing it in your bedroom. Like you just have to actively be doing it. That's why it's like when people live in the fear of not just doing the thing they want to do, it's like, well, you got to do it at some point if you want to get there. So you may as well just start at the bottom or start small and like test it out a little bit.
Yeah.
You have interviewed a lot of iconic celebrities and some really gorgeous, you know, men along the names of Harry Styles and whoever else you've, you know, interviewed.
The Rock?
Yes, The Rock.
Who would you say is your biggest, like, pinch me moment interviewing or, like, coolest celebrity person you've had?
I think everyone has someone so different. It's usually not the person that you think it's going to be. It's usually not the biggest person that you've ever interviewed or, like, the most famous or the most gorgeous.
Because they play
or
it so safe.
Yeah. But I also think, like, it's the ones that means something personally to you. Mm-hmm. So it's like a childhood like actor or a like childhood singer that you grew up like listening to that is really like, wow, this is a cool moment.
Yeah.
But I would say, I think my favorite, and I always say this, so it is kind of a boring answer, but my favorite probably was The Rock.
Oh.
Because I was a huge fan of his movies and like a huge fan of him. And I think there's something about seeing him in real life that is
just huge.
Well, that's what
huge.
I thought. I'd be like, just seeing him IRL, I'd be like, wow, you're actually here.
It's mad.
You're like my childhood.
And his head is so shiny.
He's so huge and he's so shiny and he's the cutest guy ever. Like so sweet. I interviewed him in a hotel. He was doing the Jumanji movie with Kevin Hart. He was also there. And
how's he?
He was cool as well. He was cool. But like when you're next to The Rock, like
no one,
everything else is like, white noise.
For me personally. But I remember we were interviewing him in this hotel room and he was just so sweet. Just someone that's like so huge and so famous and so recognizable. It was really easy to just see him as a person. Like
that's the best.
Yeah. And it was a really weird, beautiful experience just to be amongst him, and he just had a really nice energy and a nice presence, and he's just like a legend. So
you have a podcast as well.
I do.
You talk about near-death experiences.
We talk about everything. Oh my God. Okay. we were just catching up just before we started recording this about some of the people that I've had on recently. Yeah, it's kind of near-death experiences, talking to people that have had sort of crazy life experiences that that have really changed their outlook on life as well. And we speak to some controversial people as well, especially in this kind of new season.
I think that's important.
Yeah, it is. I like it to be kind of a place where people can share their story. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, at least with the podcast and the interviews that we do, I find it so beneficial to just create a safe space, but also give people space to speak as well. Sure. Especially with some of the more, you know, controversial characters that we've had on recently, they're very used to doing an interview and
being villainized.
Yeah. And I also think they're used to people clinging on to their every word and jumping in and assuming things before they've actually finished their sentence, you know? So I like to kind of give space and allow people to share their story. And then I can interject my opinion, you know, when they're finished, for sure. But I think, I think it's important just to allow people to kind of speak and give their testimony.
And what's the craziest story that there's one about a guy that got swallowed by a hippo?
Yes.
Or like what is, I guess, along your journey with it, the craziest story that you've literally gone, what the hell? Or your favorite story?
There was one, I think it was one of the first ones that we did.
Not someone that saved someone from the seven kids in the cave. That would be cool.
But can you please? That's a great future guest.
Please get them up. One of the divers on. That is, is it? The seven, what's it called?
There's a doc about it as well.
About the kids in Thailand that got stuck in the cave.
And if you guys, they have to like sedate them or something.
They
had
to sedate them with
ketamine
to get them out. If you guys haven't seen the movie, I will.
It's scary.
But you're on the edge of your seat. It's too stress inducing for me.
You guys might not look up seven Thai kids that get stuck in a cave and these amazing divers go and save them and they literally sedate them with ketamine and get them. It's just crazy.
It's the craziest story.
So all seven kids make
it
out.
They all made it out alive.
Wow.
But some of the divers sadly died because it was like the most advanced, crazy thing. Anyways, off topic, but please get one of them on. I would love that.
That is a great future guest. But in the same kind of realm, it was a diver that we interviewed. His name was Chris Lemons and he was working on this rig in the North Sea and he kind of like climbed down to the bottom and was like working on changing this or like doing maintenance on this structure, literally like on the seabed in the middle of the North Sea. And he's attached by like what they call like this umbilical cord, which is pumping him with like warm water and it's got his oxygen as well.
But I have anxiety already.
My chest is tight. They're in like, there was like a storm or something. And so the boat was like swaying back and forth and it severed his umbilical cord. And so he was stuck at the bottom of the North Sea with no oxygen, like no warmth, complete darkness. And the boat was like drifting away. He was down there for 30 minutes with like nothing. He was like passing in and out of consciousness.
What?
Of course.
How the fuck did he survive?
And he survived. They came back and got him. He, for whatever reason, it was crazy. He survived. But there is a documentary about him on Netflix. It's called The Last Breath. And it has the footage of him at the bottom of the ocean because they actually film the guys. Like they have cameras down there to like monitor kind of what they're doing. So you actually see him like laying like drifting in and out of consciousness on the top of the structure at the bottom of the ocean. It's the maddest thing. And his story was just crazy.
So did someone dive down to rescue him?
They came back. So I think they drifted like way off course. And then they kind of circled back around. They had no idea where he would be either. It's like pitch black.
No, this is why I believe in angels and crazy people looking out after you, because how do you technically drown and just go in and out of consciousness
for more than 5 seconds?
How do you wake back up when your lungs would fill up? His lungs would be filled with water.
I do not know. Even the guys that got him, they have no clue how he could have survived that, but he did. So that was a really good episode.
Does he still dive?
Yeah, he does.
Wow.
He still dives. I think he said like 2 months after, 2 or 3 months after,
got back in.
Jumps back on the horse. And it's the same with this hippo guy as well. Bless him. He was so sweet. He got swallowed by a hippo. He was mad. It's madness.
Was he like asleep somewhere in the jungle?
No. So he was a canoe safari guide.
Yeah.
Right.
And he was working on the Zambezi River and he was like basically ferrying tourists like up and down, which this is, after speaking to him, I will never go on one of these boats. You know, when you go on safari and you can get in like a little canoe and they'll take you out to see the wildlife. I will never do this now based on his experience. But he was doing that with just a bunch of tourists and this hippo literally like lunged out of the water at him. But he didn't know. He said to me, he was like, so something happened where his boat tipped upside down and he was like, I couldn't figure out where I was. He was like, my head, he said something like, my head was dry, but my feet were wet. And he was like, I couldn't figure it out. I could breathe. And he was like, but I could feel like bristles and he could smell like rotten egg. Oh. And he was like, oh my fucking God, I'm in the mouth head first of a hippo. Like he was down a hippo's throat.
What?
And that's how he realized. Wait, can you imagine?
How big is this mouth?
This is fucking crazy. I need a video. Like, yes.
I know.
Wait, no. How? So wait, did he think he died or something?
So he had no idea where he was. And he said his first thought was, thank God I'm in the mouth of a hippo and not a crocodile, which was also in the river as well, because then he'd be done. So he managed to wiggle himself free because I think he was kind of choking the hippo because he's like lodged down its throat.
Did he like press up its mouth to like wedge itself?
Yeah, like spat him out. So he kind of like choked. I was guessing it was he was choking it. So it spat him out. So he's like, okay, like, I need to get out of here. And then it picked him up again, but this time by the feet. So now his head is sticking out of the hippo's mouth. And his feet first. And the, you know, like they have tusks, I guess.
Yeah.
They were digging into him. So every time the hippo's moving around, these tusks are ripping him apart.
Was it trying to eat him?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Kill him, eat him. Who knows? It was also taking him underwater and just holding him under there. So he couldn't breathe. It was madness. Anyway, he fucking survived.
How did he scurry away?
He managed to break himself free.
What was the other people doing?
He lost one of his friends and one of his co-workers in it because they were actually knocked over into the water first, and he actually kind of went round to go and try and save them, which is when this kind of hippo knocked him out of his boat. And he managed to survive crazy. And his friend was found kind of washed up a couple of days after. And what was so tragic as well, what he said was, you would assume that, you know, his friend had been eaten or his friend had been mauled. There was not a scratch on his friend. His friend's body just kind of washed up and
had no damage.
He just must have like hit his head or like and drowned.
Oh my God.
Which was so sad. But this guy literally went back out, I think a year later, on the same river to canoe again. And he took a camera crew this time. And this same hippo, which had gone into hiding since his attack, lunged out of the water at him again. No. And he was like, seriously,
maybe it was out to crush him.
It was out to get him. I said it was like a big male hippo. I said, like, there is huge toxic masculinity going on because clearly he was like massively threatened by this guy.
Why did this man go back? It's like he had a deep connection that he knew the hippo was going to jump out again. This isn't real. How does this shit happen?
It's mad.
Who is controlling this little Nintendo world that we live in?
I know.
I'm actually, my brain scrambled. I can't actually believe that that's real. But did he get hurt the second time?
No, thankfully it like lunged out at him and then it just disappeared. But it had disappeared for the year before
did he have some pepper spray with him or something?
They say the people that were with him that were like on the banks of the river because they were filming, they said they've never heard a scream like it. He was like, not again.
No.
Scream.
Yeah, trauma.
Like, please, no. Did he go back to try and film the hippo and see it?
Yeah, I think he went back to you know, get back into the water and show, because he lost his arm.
Oh my God.
Was it just his arm in the process? Not just his arm. I guess in the grand scheme of things. And he was also saying when they took him to the hospital, they thought that they were going to have to amputate, I think, both of his legs and one of his arms.
No.
But it ended up just being his arm. So I think he went back to kind of show that, you know, like, this hasn't stopped him, and to kind of test himself.
And then the hippo returned.
And then this thing came back.
Oh my God. Nah, I'm in disbelief.
Crazy. But
anyways,
that's just a taster of who we chat to and the kind of stories.
I need to listen to your podcast.
It's wild.
Sappy. It's very interesting.
Yeah, get into your podcast with this.
I know.
Well, staying on the topic of documentaries, you have the documentary called Insomnia and Me.
Mm-hmm.
Explain how you got insomnia, how it's infected your mental health.
Oh God, it's been the longest journey. It's like,
how long have you had it for?
Since I was like 9.
And you still have it now?
Since you were 9?
It's better now. It goes through
through like waves. It is so dependent on my waking life, what I'm doing.
If like, you're if like I'm, stressed yeah, or...
For sure.
Oh, but 9 years old though, yeah. What were you stressing about at nine?
Home life in general could have impacted it.
Yeah. I guess it...
True.
It can be triggered from so many different things and different people. And sometimes there is actually just no trigger. Yeah. It's just like...
It's just there.
It's almost like your brain is kind of trained into these bad habits.
Yeah.
So your sleep cycle is just so messed up and you kind of have to do work to retrain your brain into a better pattern. Mm. But it's exhausting. And it was a weird documentary to film because it was something that I didn't really realize was an issue. And I never thought I'd make a documentary about it. And I mentioned it just once in like a production meeting when we were thinking about like what we wanted to make a film about. And I mentioned it as a joke. It wasn't even... to make a film about this. It was just, oh, I've got insomnia.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like, no, there's something interesting in that. And what shocked me so much was when it came out, the amount of people that related to it. Yeah. And for the first time, I kind of think they felt that they received kind of answers to questions that they'd been asking their whole life or were just able to relate to the really specific things that I was going through.
Yeah, because it's one of the things that I think can really impact people's mental health so badly that isn't very spoken about because it is quite niche. Like, yes, people can struggle with sleep or not getting enough sleep, but actual insomnia, would it be like that you just literally wouldn't sleep for the whole night? Or?
So for me, I was getting like an hour and a half every night.
And what, just laying there with your thoughts?
Yeah. I was getting like an hour and a half. And I did a breakfast show as well on radio.
Oh my God.
So I wouldn't go to bed until like 1:30. I would get into bed and I'd have to get up at 3 every day to go into the studio.
Could that play a part in it though? Like having to wake up at 3? Because when I know I have to be up early for say the airport, I swear I can't sleep well that night.
There is an anxiety to it as well. And loads of people feel as though it is so triggered by the anxiety that you're feeling like when you're, you know, getting into bed and trying to get some sort of shut eye. So I definitely think at least when I first started this new show, obviously it's a new job, you're thinking, I can't be late for this. Like I have to be somewhere and it's not like anyone else is going to give you a wake up call. Like you need to be responsibility to get yourself up and get yourself in. And it's live radio. So if I'm not there, like it's an issue.
Yeah, like, for sure. That would be anxiety inducing for sure.
It's not like just being late to the office where like, you know, you can add that time to the rest of the day. Like that show will start at the same time every single day. Yeah. And so I had to be up. So I think, that definitely played a part in it. But it's just, it's just tiring. It's a mental, it's so draining mentally, physically. Mm. It puts a lot of strain on relationships as well. Yeah. So I think people don't necessarily understand why you are so drained or you're so tired. Mm. You come across as a flake a lot as well, because you're just so mentally and physically drained to do anything that you kind of have to have a close group of people around that you that really understand for things to be okay.
And how do you manage like your work life with like consistent lack of sleep then? Like how do you navigate that?
It's hard. I think sleep for me is the one thing that, well, it's the main thing that I will always kind of sacrifice. If I'm busy or if I have so much work that I need to catch up on, I'm like happy to kind of work throughout the night. And I'm like, oh, it's fine. Like, you know, I just roll through. Yeah. I just pull an all-nighter. So it is really about just being strict with yourself and just getting yourself into
in a schedule,
like a good pattern and like just picking up some good habits along the way. But it's hard. It's like maintenance.
Yeah, I was going to say, we talk a lot about mental health on our podcast. Mm. Do you have any practices that you put in place? Like did you meditate or did you try a lot of like natural like calming therapies to help with it?
I went to therapy, which was something that I thought I'd never do. I had like I hated therapy.
Like a psychologist?
Yeah. I went to a psychologist, I hated therapy. I had experiences with therapy through my teenagers and I traumatic despised it. Like it was the worst. And I think it's a thing, especially in the UK, you know, we're so blessed with like the NHS and the support that we have. Mm. But there is a big issue with young kids and teenagers and young adults being kind of failed from a mental health perspective with the services that are put in place. And a lot of kids and teenagers have this just terrible experience growing up where like they're struggling mentally. And
we have to go in on your first appointment and basically tell your whole life story.
It's so true.
It's a very vulnerable thing to do. And if you don't connect with that person or feel like supported, then it's, why would you want to open up to then another three more? Like, it's actually, there needs to be a better way.
Therapy
to be
is really hard, and like finding the right fit. Like, even for me, like, I believe in it. I think it's the most amazing thing. I think talking to people saves you, but fuck me. Like, it is, it really deters you when you can't gel with someone, and it takes so long. Unless you just get lucky and it's like, boom, but.
For sure. It is that, I think that's what I found was, after having such a bad experience before, I was so scared to put myself back in that situation and be told like, have you tried coloring? Like, no, like this is not going to help me. Like, when I'm literally pouring my heart out to you and you're telling me like, why don't you have a bath? Yeah. Like, it's not, you know.
It's like, I can Google that.
It's lavender. Just put some lavender on your pillow.
It's not helping. But I found a really, really good therapist, and it did change my entire perspective on therapy. And I think, for me, now I'm like mid-20s, I've really learned over the past few years the importance of healing your inner child as well. Because there's so many things that happen to us in our childhood and so many traumas that we experience throughout childhood and in our teenage years that impact us in the craziest ways as we get older. Like, sometimes you don't even recognize why you're acting a certain way and how that could be linked back to something that you experienced years prior, decades prior. So I'm enjoying doing that. And that's kind of like my mental health maintenance, is like just checking in with like the 7-year-old me and being like, we're in a different place now. And that's a really like beautiful healing experience.
Well, Katz, she has a coach that kind of helps her feel her feelings rather than like diving back. Because I think for a lot of people, diving back into your childhood trauma can be too much and it's not necessary. So it's more about just like feeling what you're feeling now, figuring out where it comes from so it makes sense logically, and then dealing with how to deal with it now in the present moment.
It depends like where you're at, because I feel like I do a lot of self-reflection. Like, I dive into this brain deep all the time, and I have since I was young. So I felt like I'd connected with my inner child, and then the feelings part is so vital as well to have that acceptance, because then otherwise you don't notice when your brain is racing so much or storing things. And that's why it can impact your sleep, it can impact your mental health, when you're not just taking that minute to be like, let me check in, like my weekly check in with myself, like, where am I at with this and how can I kind of move through this? But
it's a lot. I think it's so true with what you're saying about going through, you know, unpacking childhood trauma. It's a lot, and it's so triggering, and that is not the right method for everyone. And that was one of my biggest fears, was going to a therapist. And I'm really visual, especially with like my mind and what's going on. And I could just like see me sitting there like and I saw my brain as being like this chest of drawers or this wardrobe like filled with clothes that were like all a mess. And this therapist is like pulling them all out. And I'm like, whoa.
And it's so overwhelming.
It's too much. But then I was kind of taught that there are different ways of doing it. And sometimes it's, you know, opening one drawer and like taking things out slowly and then just like repacking them neatly. Yeah, you don't have to do it all at once. Yeah. Like, just take it slow. And the fact that you're even prioritizing your mental health and showing an interest and, you know, wanting to change things or wanting to be better is sometimes enough. Like, that is a step.
Yeah.
So Rome is not built in a day. Yeah. We're all living, we're all learning.
And it's so important, I think, what I've learned and what, like I always say to Asho, is like every day just acknowledging the little steps that we are taking, and like whether that's in your career or in your mental health or in your progress with just with being a human. It's like, things are tricky, and being in your 20s and a teenager and even when you're 40 or 50, like my mom always says to me, there's always challenges, but like taking a beat and being like, I'm really proud of myself, even if it's the smallest little thing. Even if I journal and meditate in a day, I go, I did my little thing, you know?
Tick, tick. It's true. It's the little things in life as well. It's like, those bring so much joy too. Like, you don't, I'm really learning that, you know, I don't have to, I can have a weekend where I'm literally just chilling. And
I'm trying to learn that.
And like, it's so great. It's so great to get to that stage where I think we live in a world now where, you know, every single desire of ours is satisfied so immediately. Yeah. And especially with
instant
social
gratification.
Media. Yeah, we're taught that happiness is through, you know, luxurious holidays or like crazy expensive designer bags. And I think it's almost like, I feel like our brain chemistry has kind of changed a little bit.
100%.
I can't remember who I was listening to an interview once of, it may have even been like a Justin Bieber interview or something, where he was talking about like, he really struggles to be happy. And I think he related it to the fact that at a young age, he was living such a crazy life, like on and off of stage, like just touring. And so is it the dopamine or the endorphins in his brain? Like it takes a higher level of, I guess, activity to actually to get him excited.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us are kind of experiencing that just because of the environment that we live in now. It's like, we're not content with a little like weekend away to like the British seaside. We want to be going to the Maldives. Yeah. And I'm like, you can have a great time, you know, either one. You should take pleasure in the little things in life.
Social media is definitely to blame for that, I feel. Yeah. Just like everyone, even the people living these lives, make it look so much better than it actually is. Like you go on a holiday and you're documenting everything, but like, of course, in the moment you're gonna be like happy, smiling, but like 2 seconds later you could be literally like on your phone, like missing home,
and
like all of these
don't
things.
Don't discount the serotonin levels that going on a little Sunday picnic with some strawberries and the girlies can do for you.
Yes.
Yeah. Or like going for a swim in a lake, or just being young, dumb and stupid, you know? Like getting
those
drunk in a shitty pub, or like,
it's so true.
It's also relationships, like people can kind of discount something great they have in their life for something that's shiny that they might see online or that temptation. And so
everyone
stop and smell
the
roses.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being such a great guest. My brain has been blown today.
I love the diversity in all of the topics.
I know, right? We've done like hippos, we've done divers, like we've done therapy, like
TV presenting.
One stop shop over here.
I know.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening, guys.
Bye.
See you next week.